Blog Talk Radio.
Happy, happy August the 1st out there, all of our off-the-shelf listeners. It is a gorgeous day here in Philadelphia. We've had some warm days here this summer, but not too bad. I can't complain at all. Today is just, it seems like a mild day, but very nice. And a Saturday, who can beat a Saturday? First day of the month. So, again, I want to welcome everybody to Off the Shelf for this Saturday, August the 1st. I'm so happy, happy, happy to have you here with us. And I'm excited about today's show. We've just been blessed to bring you such awesome guests here on Off the Shelf. And I've learned something from every guest that we have had on today's show. So I hope you're equally as excited. And there's still time for you to tell your family and your friends that they can tune in to today's show by calling 347-994-3490. Again, that's 347-994-3490. Or they can go on the internet, and all you have to do is put in Off the Shelf, Denise Turney. It should come up right up at the top, and you can click in and connect via the chat room and hear the audio and post questions, et cetera, right there in the chat room. So, again, it's 347-994-3490. There's still time for you to connect to today's show. If you come into the middle of the show or the end, once it streams, you can come back here to Off the Shelf and listen to the show in its entirety again. And I want to start today with a great motivational quote. And the quote is, "You already have everything that you need to succeed right inside of you." I know Christ said the kingdom of heaven is inside of us. We keep looking elsewhere. So you already have everything that you need right inside of you, the answers to all your questions, etc. And next, I want to again encourage you to pick up a copy of my new book, Love Pour Over Me, if you're a mystery sleuth, and I would love to hear from you to see if you can figure out who is the person who's responsible. There is a murder mystery that cloaks Raymond and his friend's life. If you can figure out who done it before you get to the end of the story and the story reveals who did it, I'd love to hear from you to see how many of you figure it out correctly. And Love Pour Over Me is even more a book about relationships and the complications in relationships. The relationship between Raymond and Brenda, they meet while they're in college, and their relationship expands across decades. And then also a relationship between Raymond and his their four friends that he meets, they have such a good bond as friends, and it's something that you rarely hear about between men, but they have a good male friendship bonding that also, and the differences in the things that they experience in their lives. One of them is a college football standout. Raymond, he's academic and track standout, and you get to see how all these people's lives come together and influence not only the story, but each other. And you can see glimpses of your own relationship and your own life and how they've shaped you as you read and enjoy Love Pour Over Me. And you can get a copy of Love Pour Over Me in ebook or print format anywhere. If you don't see it on the shelf, ask for support, because Love Pour Over Me is carried by the largest book distributors in the world. So please go get a copy and let me know how you enjoy it. Love Pour Over Me by Denise Turney. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. And our special guest today is Dr. Ian Palmer. And Ian is the author of the book Hiking Toward Heaven. What an intriguing title. He's also the author of the book Weed and Water. Now that one got my interest. You know, they just in Colorado and other states, they've legalized. So that word jumped out at me. So Hiking Toward Heaven and Weed and Water. Ian earned his doctorate in physics from Adelaide University. He is a Christian, a grandfather, hiker, and a tennis player. And he makes his home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. If you want to learn more about Ian, all you have to do is click over to iandexterpalmer.com, and I'll spell it for you, iandexterpalmer.com, iandexterpalmer.com. And I always recommend to our listeners that you go over to the person's website, as you listen to them speak today's show. And you can dig in deeper, read excerpts, learn more about them, even as you enjoy the show. And so while you're there, you can learn more about his books. And he's got some beautiful photos there that he shares that you can check out, as well as his blog. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Ian.
Thank you, Denise. It's lovely to be here. And I wanted to say that if ever you get sick of the humidity up there in Pennsylvania, come down to Albuquerque. We have very little humidity down here. It gets hot, but it's not humid, which makes it very nice in the summertime.
You know what? I hear the same thing. People, Arizona, there are people who
yes.
love the weather in Arizona, even though you hear, oh, my God, 105 degrees. But they say it's a different type of heat. So,
yes,
the same thing.
Yes, yeah.
Now, are you a
yeah,
New Mexico
yeah.
When I was doing the research, and we've had guests on who've traveled the globe, are you a New Mexico native? And if not, can you tell us where you were born and what life was like for you growing up there?
I was born and raised in Australia.
Oh.
And a woman brought me to the USA, American woman. I've lived here more than I have in Australia. But I was raised in a small country town, like 2,000 people. There's not many towns in the U.S. that are as small as that. That's a wheat and sheep farming type community. And I did my education in the big city of Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia. You know, Australia is as big as the USA, but we only
mm-hmm.
have 7 states. And so South Australia is a huge state, and it's bigger than Texas, and all of them are. And so, but Adelaide was where I did my doctorate. I studied cosmic rays from the sun and how they travel to the earth. So I was kind of pretty nerdy in my studies there. And I came to the U.S. and worked in Los Alamos, the place where they made the bomb. That's in New Mexico. And I was here for 1 year and then moved to Tulsa and Houston and finally retired and came back to Albuquerque because I love the Southwest USA. I love the mountains and the desert and the culture and the climate and the arts and crafts. So that's where I am now.
You know, you have a Southern accent. I wonder if when you were first going to tell me where you're from, I thought you were getting ready to say, I'm from Kentucky or Louisiana. So, Australia, okay.
You're right, Denise. I'm from the South, the deep South, but it's a very deep South in Australia.
Okay. Now, in one picture at your website, it looks like there's snow on the ground. I was really surprised. I'm thinking snow on the ground. I'm in New Mexico. Now, does it regularly snow there in the winter?
Well,
I had to ask you that because that really stunned me for some reason.
Yeah. Well, New Mexico is often thought of as a hot desert state, and the bottom half of it is. But in the northern half, where Albuquerque is 5,000 feet, it's a mile-high city like Denver. And so we get 3 or 4 snows a year when the snow stays on the ground. But I can look out my riding window, and there's a huge mountain out there that's 11,000 feet. And that gets snow. We have a ski run up there. And we're not far from Santa Fe, and that's at 7,000 feet. So there's lots of snow in the northern part of Albuquerque.
Interesting. See, I always learn something, and I'm sure I'm going to learn even more, and so will our listeners as we continue with today's show. Now, how long, Ian, have you been a hiker, and how has hiking? You sound like your major in physics and the studying the sun. You seem like you have this natural attraction to nature. Things about nature. Now, how long have you been a hiker, and how has hiking impacted your life as a writer?
My parents took me hiking first when I was 10 years old into the ranges and not far from home in Australia. And I remember that trip. I remember falling in love with those desert mountains. And And that's where it started. And there's been this love inside of me for, excuse me, for nature and hiking ever since then. So I'm now retired, and I've hiked all of my life. And you're right. When I get out there, I try to notice everything. So I notice the trail. I notice the trees, the flowers, and of course the if there are any animals, you know, there, deer or elk that we sometimes see, and of course the mountains, the topography, and I love hiking in the mountains. And I also love hiking in the desert. If there's a stream that I can follow, then that makes it even better. There's nothing like having lunch by a gurgling stream. And that's always a winner. But to me, God is in all of those things. You mentioned, I loved your quote that you started the session with about God being inside of you and his resources being there. St. Paul said it's no longer I that live, but Christ who lives in me. And that's the way I've always felt about God. And so I agree totally with that statement. And I think those resources are accessible all the time if we open up to them. But when I hike, I see God in nature everywhere. You know, whether it's a sunset or a you know, a pine tree or, you know, a rabbit or just whatever. And the hand of God to me is in all of those things, and so it's a little bit like, you know, worshiping there. You know, when I go hiking.
Now, do you always plan out your trips? And I'm thinking to connecting this in the way we like to sometimes live our lives, or we want to know what's coming next. We don't, scientists, psychologists, and the empirical science have known that we do not like the unknown. We don't like it. We want to know, but how is this going to turn out for me? Before I take the first dip, I want to know how this is going to turn out. When you go hiking, do you, because this in nature, I mean, we know we can't control nature. A wolf could suddenly appear. Something could appear somewhere that you just didn't expect. Do you generally plan your hiking trips? I know you talked about following a stream. Do you generally plan your hiking trips, or do you sometimes just go out and just randomly explore and you end up wherever you end up?
That's a good question. I'm more of a planner, Denise. I'm an organizer, and I like to be organized as much as I can. So I do plan a hike. I have an objective in mind, an end point, and I pick a trail. Now, there are times when I'll divert from that and go exploring. To me, the whole thing's an exploration. So, you know, it's not only about the destination. But there's two sides to my brain. There's the right brain, the intuitive exploring side, and the left brain is the analytical organization side. And I wrote a book many years ago called Unleash Your Creative Mind, arguing that creativity needs both sides of the brain. You need, in my research, switching over to that now, I've had to use both, because as a scientist, I've done research on my life, and that's the unknown. I mean, most of my life I've dealt with, how do I solve this? And I've solved quite a few scientific problems along the way, and that requires, you know, using the intuitive brain, exploring different ideas, and then later on evaluating them and analyzing them and kind of executing them. So that's I kind of do both, but if you ask me what's my natural style, it's organizing and analyzing. That's the first thing I do, and sometimes I have to stop myself and say, wait a minute, you know. But when I'm hiking, you know, there's after the preparation, you know, then it's the right brain. You know, I see things everywhere, and, you know, the beauty of God and his creation I see, and that's kind of, that comes through the right brain. So it's a nice mix of both.
Okay. Now, please tell our off-the-shelf listeners about Hiking Toward Heaven. And is the book, is it fiction or nonfiction? And if you could just give us an overview of the book.
Yes, yes. This was my second book. I was hiking with a friend once, telling him that I wanted to write a book. And he said, why don't you write a book about hiking? Because you love to hike. And the other side of that clicked. The other side of the equation came when I remember that I've always been fascinated by the interaction between God and man. How does God communicate with man? How does man communicate with God? Can we receive insights and wisdom from God on a daily basis? And that was the origin of the book. It's labeled as a fiction book, but it's a lot of truth in there. And the most common comment I get is, I don't know what's truth and what's fiction in your book. My granddaughter, is kidnapped in the first chapter, and that's how it starts. And everybody asked me about that. Well, she's rescued by a stranger, and who is a lady, a mysterious lady, and she's more than she appears to be. But she says, I'm single, and so I wanted to date this lady because she was attractive, and she saved my granddaughter. And she says, no, I can't do that, but I tell you what we can do. How about we take a series of hikes? And she said, I'll tell you about things that I know that you've never heard of, and you can tell me about what it's like to live as a human. Tell me about your problems and your successes, etc. So that begins six different hikes in New Mexico and Arizona, and the last one is in Australia. I think of it as the best one, though. And we run into these situations. There's drama in every hike. There's strange things that happen, terrifying things that happen. But she's kind of a rescuer, as we knew when she rescued my granddaughter. And she's very revealing. It's what we learn. She wants to hike with my granddaughter. On each hike, and so other people come along, and so that's how it goes, and so we learn a lot from her, and she says she learns a lot about our humanity from those hikes. So that's how it goes.
And how did your granddaughter in the book? You know, it's fiction, but was she hiking alone? How did she get kidnapped? Was she with you, and she went off on by herself? How did that happen?
Well, this happened 5 minutes from my house in the Arroyo. Rivers out here we call arroyos. Arroyos are dry riverbeds. They only flow when we get big thunderstorms, which we do this time of year. And the Arroyo is just 5 minutes walk, and she was playing with her younger brother in the Arroyo when she was kidnapped by a couple of gang members down in the bottom of the Arroyo. And I didn't know how to rescue her, but this is when Michelle showed up. Michelle is the mysterious co-angel, and Michelle shows up, and that's how it happens. So that's
wow.
I don't want to tell you exactly what's true. A lot of the hikes are true, based on true hikes that I've been, all of them actually, all six hikes are based on hikes that I've done. And that arroyo is, that's right there. And my granddaughter's played in that arroyo.
You only hear about certain areas when you hear gangs. Albuquerque, I don't know, I never heard, you don't hear much about it. It's like, you don't even hear like bad things out of Australia, I don't hear. I never hear on the news anything bad. I know every place has positive and negative things that happen, but I just don't hear about it. So when you say gang, I'm like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I never heard of that.
I'll tell you a story, Denise. My yard man told me this week that his grandson was shot by a flyby, flyby shooting, and
wow.
he's 15, and he
wow.
was with two buddies, 14 and 17, and one died, and his grandson is critical in hospital, and I was astonished that happened this week.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
So we have gangs here, and unfortunately, and so anyway, things like that happen occasionally, and that
yeah,
was right.
I think somebody reading your book, and they think Albuquerque, they're probably like, nah.
Well, as
nah,
I said before,
this is totally made up. This is. There's no gangs in Albuquerque. It's just again, you learn, you just learn so much when you communicate. That's shocking to me for some reason.
Well, to just correct that impression, Denise, I've lived here 8 years and I have not encountered any crime myself. So it's there's lots of it's still a wonderful city to live in. So.
Now, you're a scientist by trade, so we were talking earlier, and you're saying, and I never thought of it that way, that as a scientist, I always think very logical thinking. I mean, and I think scientists get that reputation, very just exact in the thinking, almost OCD-like exact, when you think of a scientist, and then you think, wow, a scientist wrote a book? So what just the images of a scientist. Now, what inspired you? And it's interesting that you said that to really do science, you have to delve into the unknown. You have to. So what inspired you to write Hiking Toward Heaven, being that you're a scientist by trade?
Yes. Let me come back to that in just a second. As a scientist, during my doctorate, I made a discovery that was significant, and I didn't know how significant it was, and so I wrote it up and passed it along to my supervisor. He was a very busy man, and he didn't get to it because he was too busy. And so I pulled it back after a couple of tries. And then 6 months later, that was when I was living in Australia, that an American woman made the same discovery and published it and received a lot of accolades for that.
Mm.
And so I missed not... So it was a quite a significant discovery, which I would have gotten credit for that, and back then that was real important to me, and I missed it. It took me a year to get over that, Denise.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
I didn't have any falling out with my boss, who was a very wonderful, positive man. He always believed in me, and that's a gift that I try to adopt with anyone else. Anyway, that's how that happened, but it was a significant discovery, and I've made several others as a scientist, because most of my work is research, but most scientists are doing research. I'm also an engineer. I'm disguised as an engineer, and engineers are more application, perhaps a little less, researchy, a little more applicated, a little more left brain, but I worked on all companies subsequently for many years, and I did a lot of research, a lot of right brain stuff. But you asked about how I came to write the book. Was that your question?
Yeah. What inspired you? I just find when I'm starting to do the research on the guests, there's usually something that just jumps out at me, like wow, or it not shocks, but I find it something surprising. But I think you are the first science person who worked as a scientist we've had on Off the Shelf. And then to hear that you wrote a book, for some reason I just found. So I wanted to ask, what inspired you to write Hiking Toward Heaven?
I think one answer is that God put it in my heart. Because my first book was 1977, and I gave a class on how to be more creative using the two sides of the brain, and 200 people showed up, and that shocked me. I was amazed and a little terrified by that, but there was a great deal of interest in that back then. That still is now, actually. A lot of people use the model of the intuitive and the analytic, to develop their creativity. I think God put it in my heart, Denise. I've written lots of stuff as a scientist. I've written 100 articles, but this was different. This was to be popular writing, and I've always, as I said, been intrigued by God's communication. How does he communicate with us? How do we know it's God? All those big questions and getting insights and wisdom from God. And I think that's how it came. I think, God put it in my heart, and I started writing when I had some time and loved it, discovered I loved it. The book Weed and Water, my recent book, which we'll turn to in a bit, is... that came about because I knew a boy who got involved in drugs and went down, and that's what got that was the inspiration for that one. I wanted to explore, what that's like, the difficulties of getting out, the realities of going down, the shame, the hurt towards his mom, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of was the inspiration for that one, I think. So
now, again, we're going back to like this fact, the work that you have to do as a scientist, and I don't care what your career field is, writing a book. Having written 6 novels myself, that is, I would always hear best-selling authors say, if you can do something else, by all means do it. Because as they said, writing a novel is hard work. The best writers would say it. And I thought, nah, it's easy. But when you really get down to writing and writing a story that attracts the interest of hundreds and thousands of people, that is work. You might pull off one easily, but I don't know if people know just how much work goes into writing a good novel. So I wanted to ask you, challenges, Ian, what were some of the challenges and advantages the challenges and advantages that you found based on your background that you brought to the table when you actually sat down and started writing Hiking Toward Heaven? Because you got to develop your characters, you've got to develop your plot, you've got to make sure everything connects, you can't have too many characters, you've got to work on dialogue. So what were some of the challenges and advantages that you ran into?
That's a good question, too. I'll say this first. To me, writing a book is easy. Marketing a book is difficult. Now, I'm not talking about a bestseller because I haven't written a bestseller yet, but I'd like to write 10 books in 10 years. That's my goal.
Okay.
But I just sit down and I can write half a day and each day, and I love it. So, then I don't worry too much about the marketing at that point. But then marketing is so time-consuming. Unless you happen to hit on a bestseller. And so that's my answer there. I could write a book in 3 months, a decent book. So the other part is interesting because as a scientist, I wrote many, many articles, scientific articles, and nothing personal in there and no dialogue, no emotions. And so all of a sudden I decide to write, Hiking Toward Heaven and Weed and Water. Well, Hiking Toward Heaven, I've got to figure this out. And that was the big challenge for me is, how do I write dialogue? I've never written dialogue. But it came. And emotions, I'm still learning about emotions. I tend to write, using my analytic, my side of the brain and stuff. I've got to stop each day and say, wait a minute, I need to put some emotion here. And so then I do that. So that's been the biggest challenge, I think.
Why? So it's come naturally. Is Hiking Toward Heaven?
The other part is.
Go ahead.
Sorry, can I just say one other thing?
Sure, absolutely.
The other part is I think because God put, you know, these stories in my heart, I've wanted to include God in these books. Mm-hmm. So they really have a spiritual basis. But I have never wanted them to be preachy or dogmatic. Okay, so I treat the subject with tender care. Okay, the subject of God. I don't want to antagonize anybody, non-believers. You know, believers who don't believe in God. I would hope that they're still interested in these hikes. Mm-hmm. Okay, even though they may not believe in God. And so mm-hmm. that's been an inspiration, trying to work God into both these books. And
okay.
And at the same time, I want to attract Christian readers because they're, you know, there's a Christian basis here, you know, behind all this.
Now,
I'm sorry, I interrupted you there. Yeah.
No, you didn't. No, you're not at all. Is hiking toward heaven, is it told through the eyes of an adult? You know, you said that it started it, that your granddaughter is kidnapped, but is it told through the eyes of an adult, or is the story told through the eyes of a child, and why did you choose this particular approach?
Yeah, in both, it's told through the stories of an adult who is me.
Okay.
So in the first case, I am the grandfather called Popper to Kara, you know, the my granddaughter who's kidnapped. In the second book, Weed and Water, I'm a mentor to the next door teenager, Ethan, but my name is still Popper, so I'm the same Popper. So both stories are written through my perception. I suppose I did that, Denise, because it's easier. I mean, easier for a new popular writer. My next book, which will be about fracking, which is petroleum engineering, which
mm-hmm.
I worked in many times, I worked many years in that area. I'm going to go to the third point of view, so I'm going to write that from the point of view, not of, from myself, not personal, but of a frack engineer who works in the frack van and does frack jobs. So that'll be a bit of a change.
Oh, it's so exciting talking to you, and it's inspiring me. You retired scientist, and now you're taking up book writing, and you've worked in oil and engineering now. Is there a
mm-hmm.
single message that you want readers to take away from reading Hiking Toward Heaven?
Yes. It would be to be open to God,
mm-hmm.
the resources of God. That first book is about largely about the resources of God and how Kara, my granddaughter, can learn to be open to them, and how we as adults, grandparents or parents, can open up as a child, which is what Jesus said.
Yes. Wow.
He said, if you want
to
come to God, you know, come as a child, you know, which means
yes.
open your mind to so many scientists and other intelligentsia, let me put it, are skeptical and critical, and it's the opposite. I think pride comes into it somewhere, but they can be quite negative about this and about the childlike faith, which
mm-hmm.
is the one thing that you know, childlike faith is the one thing that you can use to access God. That's what God wants. It's pretty clear from the biblical stories of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. What have readers been saying to you before we start talking, go into Weed and Water? What have readers been saying about Hiking Toward Heaven?
Oh, the most common comment is, I don't know what's true and what's not.
Oh,
and,
well, that's
and,
a compliment.
Like you.
That's a compliment.
Well, I think it is. I think it is.
Yes.
It's a level of mystery, right? So I my way of answering that is to say, read the whole story and then tell me what you think. And that always leads to, you know, interesting discussion.
Okay. Now, how soon after you finished writing Hiking Toward Heaven did you start on Weed and Water?
Oh, I've got to stop and think about that. It was it wasn't very long. It was 6 months probably.
Okay.
Like I say, my goal is to write one book every year, and I think I can do that. And so I finished Weed and Water in January, and I've started two books since then.
Wow.
The one on fracking, and the other one will be interesting too, I think, because it's about insights and wisdom from God. And,
okay.
I mean, how can we always expect this? And I mentioned the part about God living within us, and so it seems like these ideas ought to be popping up all the time.
You would think.
That's number one. Number two is, how do you know it's God? You know, that's
yes.
the dilemma that we
yes.
face. You know, is this
yes.
from God, or is this
yes.
not from God? And so,
right.
So that's
yeah.
where that
no,
one
I...
came from. And, yeah. That one is a different title. It's called The Nerd in the Blue Leather Jacket. I was a nerd growing up. I mean, I just was always very studious. I did play sport, but I had no social outgoing at all. I was socially inept, and that's why I call myself a nerd. And that went on for many years. But then I call myself a nerd because I just believe implicitly in God. I don't see a problem as a scientist with believing in God. My faith does not conflict with my science. And so in that respect, I call myself a nerd. So it's kind of, I look back over my, you know, the history of my life, personal life and career, and also mm-hmm. other people, and I see the hand of God everywhere. And
mm-hmm.
as I started to write these incidents down, I mean, it's been a joy to me to look back over my life and to interview other people about, you know, where the hand of God, where they've seen the hand of God, and it's had a very curious, very sentimental type reaction to me. So I've enjoyed writing that one.
Now, Ethan is your next door neighbor in Weed and Water.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about Ethan, and is he
yes.
the focal character in the book? But can you describe
yes.
him a little bit to the off-the-shelf listeners?
Ethan is a star athlete, being raised by a single mom, Angelina, who's a beautiful woman, and they live next door to me. Excuse me. And ever since he was a youngster, I offered to take him hiking, and which, you know, to broaden his experience, because he has a deadbeat dad. And that's how, excuse me, sometimes I get emotional.
It's okay.
Okay. So that's how our relationship starts. And then he makes, he gets herpes from a cheerleader called
wow.
Rachel. And just a one-time thing, and he's basically a good kid, but he makes a mistake there, and then he gets blackballed by his football teammates. He plays in the first football team, and he's a very good basketball player, too. He's the point guard. He gets blackballed by jealous teammates, and shame comes on. And he's going down, and he gets into drugs, and so the rest of the story is about
how
he comes out, how he comes out, you know,
how
can he get out, and again a mysterious stranger shows up, a guy called Jackson, and he's very helpful. He challenges the boy about his moral choices. And he brings
How old is Ethan when he...
16.
He gets into this trouble. And how old is he when you start taking him hiking?
I don't talk about that too much in the book, but I don't actually describe it. But 10-ish, that's when I started hiking, 10.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And how old is he when he starts to get into trouble after he's blackballed? 16.
16.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a junior. He's a junior. So then, you know, this threatens his senior year.
Okay.
Now, like so I say, he's a champion footballer and basketballer, and so when he starts going down, you know, the football buddies betray him. Basically, there's a lot of jealousy there with one of the running backs, and the basketballers stay by him, and that's significant.
So
to keep him on the straight and narrow. You know, the basketball coach stays with him, the football coach doesn't. So there's tremendous stresses in his life, and so he flip flops. He becomes a flip flopper. As he's trying to recover, after Jackson shows up and points out the way, you know, number one, you got to go to rehab. Number two, you got to get a hold of God. And from then on, it's a challenge.
He sounds like he's really, though, if they're jealous, he's really a star athlete, like on his way to a college scholarship, it sounds like.
Yep.
So what's happening at the start of weed and water? And I have to ask you this. You said, okay, so he gets herpes from a cheerleader he's with. How does that get out even? You would think that both of them would keep that a secret and nobody would ever know.
He breaks up with Rachel because of the shame of it and because of his jealous teammates. I've got that wrong. He breaks up. He gets into drugs and breaks up, he starts getting into drugs, I should say, breaks up. Then Rachel spreads the message. Apparently tells the footballers, So then the footballers, like I say, there's natural jealousy there, competitiveness, I should put it. And the running back he's just disreputable, and so he wants to take him down. So he starts talking about him.
Okay, now Jim's I get
sad.
It.
The boy's struggling to keep his head up, you know, and things like that happen. And then the coach gets in on it, and the coach lambasts him and says, if you mess up, you're gone. And that's just when he's starting to rise up, and so he goes crashing off the wagon again when his football coach says that.
Very
sad. Makes me cry.
Yeah, but well, his coaches are probably the father figures in his life. And he wants to make them proud of him. Can you tell us about his mom and Michelle and Kara and some of the other characters? You touched on the coaches and the running back, but Michelle and Kara, Kara and some of the other characters. Could you introduce them to off the shelf listeners?
Yeah, in let me. Do Weed and Water first, which we're talking about, and so which is Ethan and Rachel. The running back is Logan, and he's, well, I can't say that word on the radio. The guy that introduces him to drugs is Randy, and I dislike Randy immensely.
So what does Randy do? Is he on the football team?
No. Randy's just a what's the word for that? Anyway, he's just prowling around, waiting to, you know, introduce people to drugs. There's a word for that, and I can't think of it. Is it sycophant? No, I'm not sure. Anyway, he's an opportunist, and he sees Ethan in trouble. And he moves in very subtly and very very cleverly and says, "Hey, why don't you come to this party? Come to this party, and I'll introduce you to some people." And
you know what? I'm glad you said that, and I hope that the right people tune into today's show. You put that so well that there are people out there, whether you're selling a product or whatever, there are actually people out there when they see the opportunity, they pull you in and pull you down. They almost,
yeah.
it's like
yeah.
it's their
yeah.
career. They're just
yeah.
watching
yeah.
and waiting to spot somebody
mm.
that they're like, ah, this is the right person for me to take down.
Yeah.
It's the right person
yes.
for me to introduce to alcohol
yep.
or drugs
yep. Yep.
or
yep.
pick a
yep.
thing. And that's what they do their whole life almost. And I
yep.
would
yep.
hope that they come across as a friend. And I would hope that the right people tune in to today's show. And if somebody's, they're feeling like the character in this book, Ethan, like all is lost, that when these people show up, that they're on a red hot alert. And they're like, no, pal, that's all right. You can keep going.
yeah, 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 yeah. Somebody asked me what character that I dislike the most, and I said straight away, Randy. And then they asked me what character I like the most, and I said Jackson, who's the co-angel, and he's more than he indicates he is when he shows up. But he has the hand of God behind him and challenges Ethan, and so. Again, they go, this is another aspect of it, because Jackson says the best way to help, you know, a boy like this is going down is to suggest mutual interests. And so he says, let's go river rafting. Let's go rafting down the Rio Grande, which is the mighty river here in New Mexico. And they get into trouble in one of the rapids there, and they nearly turn over. And but that starts to build trust. And this book, Weed and Water, is about building trust between teenagers and adults. And there's a lot of wisdom in there, I think. It's hard to do. It's very hard because you get broken trust with parents. But Jackson is very wise, and I'm on board with this, and, you know, always trying to help. And so we three get to adventuring, and, you know, and we run into a mountain lion, and we chase away a cottonmouth snake, you know, a deadly water moccasin snake and stuff like that, you know, on the way through. But in amongst this, there's this, Jackson brings this wisdom. This he challenges Ethan at every moment. And Ethan comes around, you know, slowly. But on the way, he's flip-flopping. And that flip-flopping is very difficult to deal with. But Jackson gets in. I'll say one last thing about this. Jackson discusses helps Ethan to understand failure. That's number one moral principle in here. You are not a failure because you fail. You are a failure if you don't fail, because that means you're not trying to do anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's wisdom that's not well understood by, you know, teenagers and adults. And so failure is a good thing, because it means
yeah.
that you're trying.
Yes. Yep. And you're trying new things. You keep doing
right.
that, you know,
and the
you,
second,
you can't, you're probably not going to
right.
fail at something
and
you've done
you,
a thousand
right.
times.
If you try new things, you know, the more new things you try, the more failures you're going to have, but the more success you're going to have too. The second
mm-hmm.
thing is forgiveness, because Ethan can't forgive Rachel. who brought him the herpes. And Jackson says, excuse me, Jackson says, forgiveness is vertical. It's between you and God. And it doesn't involve Rachel.
Wow.
And reconciliation is horizontal, and that involves Rachel. And you may reconcile, or you may not reconcile. Sometimes you can't reconcile. Sometimes the other person doesn't want to reconcile, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Ethan says, I don't want to reconcile. And Jackson says, that's okay, but you've got to forgive. And that's
mm-hmm.
that's between you and God. That's vertical.
Yeah. Now, what
that's
have readers
that's not
been,
well understood.
You know what I thought? Have you ever thought about taking you, because it seems like there's some action in each of the books, these two books anyway, with the hiking and then the water rafting. But just with these two, have you ever thought about exploring that concept into like a TV series? I don't know if they have those there where you live and you there's a character who's facing a challenge, and there's those action scenes you could bring in with the hiking or the water rafting that could hold preteen and some early teens interest. Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Yes, it has. I haven't gotten that far yet, Denise. but I'm trying to expand different marketing methods for this, and that's certainly one of those. I had lunch the other day at Olive Garden with an old friend who has a ministry to teenagers in jail. And he was, you know, we had a long discussion about that and about how this book might help them and the principles within it. But your point is a good one, and I need to think more about that and see where I can take that. Thanks for that suggestion.
And what have readers been saying about weed and water?
Well, it's mixed. They say good things. A good friend is a manager of a Pep Boys store. He said something like, sit down, take your shoes off, and relax, and be prepared for an entertaining journey. Said,
okay.
I love this book, and he wrote it up. I love this book, and he said, the message I got from the book was that don't give up on God, because God won't give up on you, which was a nice thing to say. And so another lady friend, her first comment was, the shame, leading the boy Ethan from shame into grace, meaning God's grace, meaning he's realized that God loves him just as he is, that he doesn't have to perform, but God loves him, he just needs to accept God. From shame to grace, she said, that was the big thing that I got out of that. So there's a couple of instances there.
Yeah. Can you tell? You said writing it comes very easily to you, and you've, as a scientist, you've written like 100 or more articles. But when it comes to writing a book, can you tell us, for off-the-shelf listeners who themselves would like to write a book, but some people struggle with getting started? Can you tell us about the process that you use to write your books? Like, did you use an outline? Did you keep a journal? Or did you just sit down and start writing? What's the process that you use to actually create the book?
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. I just start writing. I don't ever get blocked. If I feel like I'm blocked, I just start writing. I don't outline a book first. I write one short story at a time. Okay, and the outline comes. So chapter one might be the first short story. I've just written chapter one for my book on fracking. Okay, and after I'd written chapter one, I thought, bingo, now I can write a short story because now I know what chapter two is going to be. So it comes to me. The critical thing is to sit down and start writing, start typing. And my best model for that is Ian Fleming. Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond books. Every English winter, when the weather was terrible, he'd go down to Jamaica and he'd write a book. He would write 2,000 words every morning, and then he'd go play in the afternoon. He had eventually lots of Hollywood friends, and, of course, the beach was right there. But he wasn't distracted by the beach. He had a triangular desk, which he set in the corner, and there was no window, nothing to distract him. And he would write 2,000 words every morning, and then he'd go play. And so that's the discipline. In my experience, it's just discipline. It's to sit down and write yourself a short story. And then the rest will come. This is science, too. As we wrestle with a problem, sometimes we don't get the answer, but if we go to bed, we get it in the shower in the morning, or we get it dancing that night, or we get it when we're jogging. Answers come from the subconscious mind that's been working on it, so long as we put the information in there. So wrestle with it. If you're having block, wrestle with it or whatever, go to bed. And then start again next morning, and you'll have a different perspective, and there'll be more information in your mind.
Wow, thanks for sharing that. But the thing, the good reminder, discipline. And we've had other people come on,
yes,
and say, you just have to say, I'm going to put in 1 to 2 hours a day, or however many,
yeah,
words, and you have to stick to it. You have to stick,
yeah,
to it. If you,
yeah,
keep waiting for the muse to hit, it may, you may go weeks or months before you write anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's,
I
very,
think that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very
tough way
point
to go.
No, we always want to, we want to feel when we're writing that we're writing something great. And when you're disciplined, you don't always feel that way, but that's how you do get the work done. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now, you also,
yeah,
blog. I wanted to ask you, how has blogging helped to introduce your books to readers?
Yes. I write a blog every 2 weeks, and that's on my website, www.iandexterpalmer.com, as you mentioned. Again, I'm disciplined. I try to do one every 2 weeks. And I try to give them substance, okay? So I write about spiritual-based, you know, blogs. Each one, I try to have a spiritual connection there. They're not preachy at all. And there are a variety of things. I write about science. You know, I write about hiking, as in traveling. I write about personal faith. You know, I have several different categories. And that helps to, I think it's just practice. You know, I spend 6 hours on a blog usually, and in my book, the one about insights and wisdom from God that have, you know, that I'm writing, I find when I look back that there are several blogs that I can put in there, just almost as they are. And so I've written over 100 blogs. They've become a resource for my future writing. And so,
wow.
But the last one I wrote was on my stepdaughter had a very aggressive breast cancer removed and took a year of chemo. And, pardon me. And she went to a retreat, a nutritional retreat in Sedona, Arizona, which is a very beautiful place. If you haven't been there, put it on your list. And 3 weeks of intensive eating vegetables, fruits, and doing enemas,
mm-hmm,
and she left there on top of the world, she says.
Wow.
She says, had I known what I know now, I may never have done the chemo and the radiation. And she looks and...
Wow, diet. You
I'm
know,
sorry.
They tell you...
She looks and acts 10 years younger. And it's,
wow,
it's,
yeah, diet.
It's kind of a miracle. And so I wrote a blog about alternative forms of cancer treatment. And,
right,
and that blog was well received.
Wow. Now, we're coming down to like the last 2 minutes of today's show. Where can off-the-shelf listeners get a copy of your books?
You can get it from the big stores, Barnes & Noble, or you can go direct to Amazon.com, or you can order them, and the link is in my website. So if you go to the website, iandexterpalmer.com, the links are there for Hiking Toward Heaven and Weed and Water. So
now,
it's very easy
any,
to order them right there.
Are you on any social networks? We'd like to let our listeners know where you are. Are you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram?
Yeah,
are you on,
yeah,
any...
Can
you
Facebook,
tell us which
Facebook
ones you're on and how people can find you?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm on Facebook, and I think if you Google on me, Ian Palmer or Ian Dexter Palmer, that will come up. I don't know the actual address there.
Okay, but you are on Facebook and you're on Twitter.
Yes.
Okay.
Not on Twitter. No.
Oh, not on Twitter.
Facebook.
You're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and to our off-the-shelf listeners, you can check out, he has, again, beautiful photographs and his blog at his website, iandexterpalmer.com. And, again, that's iandexterpalmer.com, iandexterpalmer.com. We have enjoyed having Dr. Palmer here with us on Off the Shelf this morning. He's the author of Hiking Toward Heaven and Weed and Water. He's working on a new book, and he also has a nonfiction book on how to be more creative, how to use more of your creative side. That's his first book. first book, then Hiking Toward Heaven, then Weed and Water. He's working on a book about fracking, as he's worked also worked as an engineer and a scientist. And he's got another book in the works, which you can go again to his website, iandexterpalmer.com, and learn and keep up with not only his blog, his pictures, but his upcoming books and any book signings and appearances that he might have scheduled. So we want to thank Dr. Ian Palmer for being here with us this morning. Please go out and support him and get and enjoy Hiking Toward Heaven and Weed and Water. Thank you, Dr. Palmer, for being here with us. As I always tell our listeners, you are amazing. You are incredible. You're awesome. Go out and create a fabulous day for yourself. See you back here next Saturday, 11 a.m. New York City time. Bye for now. Ian, I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you, Denise. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.